So I want to make one brief comment. I always start off with a brief comment. I'll phase that out next year, hopefully. But one of the overarching themes of our discussion this last few shiurim and maybe last week or two has been about efficiency. Kedera de Beshutvi lo Kurira lo Chamima. Sound familiar? It struck me that in the discussion of Meitzar Shehechziku bo Rabim, the path that the Rabim appropriate for themselves, that comes up a little bit. Do you guys catch where? And this Rashbam in Bavasra Kufam at Aleph, when he talks about the Meitzar Shehechziku bo Rabim, and like the other Rishonim, like Rabbeinu Yonah, which we saw, he says this idea that Rabbim are kebezdin dami, that's why they have this power to appropriate, to take the path for themselves. What does he say to explain why they are kebezdin? Hello, Ned. Diman minayu mazmin lahai lebedina. So if a yachid had some sort of claim as an ezdin, he would have to go to bezdin in order to enforce it. The Rabbim doesn't have to go to bezdin. Why? Because they already have the status. Why are they deemed to have the status? Deman minayu mazmen lahai beidina. What does that sound like, Ned?
You can't identify a party to fight to court, so there has to be some way to resolve disputes and do that by giving it to the party of court.
Exactly. Strange process of reasoning, but it's exactly that. The thought is that whenever you're dealing with the Rabbim, you have this bystander effect, where no one's going to be incentivized to bring the claim. You guys familiar with this? And sometimes this is thought of like the externality that happens is not. No one's forced to bear the cost of it. Like in the tzibur, no one's really worried about taking care of it on their own, right? That's people litter on public property. So no one here is going to adjudicate the claim on behalf of the tzibur because the tzibur doesn't really look out for itself because each yachid says, it's not my issue, it's the Rabbin's problem, right? So that too is a type of efficiency type consideration. There's a great sma in the second parak where, anybody read the Mishnayos in the second parak about, let's say you have a dove cove, a shovach yonim. You guys familiar with this? And the Mishnayos talk about how you have to have 50 amos in your chatzer in order to have one. So let's say you had one illegally. So you have to move it. You have to move it out of the town. That's the din. But you're entitled to compensation from the tzibur. So the shayla that comes up in the sma is, do you first get paid and then move it? Or do you have to move it and then you get paid? And the sma says that you first have to move it, only then are you entitled to get paid. And he says, because we're dealing with the rights of the tzibur, no one in the tzibur is going to press the claim against this dove cove owner, because nobody cares about public property. So that's why the halacha says he's not entitled to be compensated until he actually moves it. So he first has the duty to move it, otherwise it's going to end up not being resolved at all. So that's like a type of consideration that the way the law sets its rules is concerned by this fact that things in the tzibur will just be ignored. Okay, so that's one point I wanted to make. And then I wanted to make a totally irrelevant hara about this Ramban, about Basra Yud Beis Amud Aleph, only because it comes up along the way. Did you guys see the discussion of Chacham Adav Minavi? You know why this comes up in our sugya? This could be a question on the Bechina. Why does Chacham Adav Minavi come up on the Bechina? Benji?
Because it's fun and it's there.
Why?
Because it's fun and it's
there. No, why is it in the sugya? Now that it's in the sugya, it's fun, and you're right, it's fun that it's there.
Because it's comparable to...
No.
The
Gemara says that the shear for plowing, for chalukah, is ene elu ela divrei, is divrei nevius. And as Rishonim there point out, divrei nevius is an insult. Catch that? It's like a lot of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, like Maran Mirunberg used to call the Rambam the Urim V'tumim, because he would just tell you what the din is without giving the explanation, right? It's just you say like that, he kind of gives you the answer, but he doesn't tell you how. So here too, it's an insult. It's divrei nevius in that, like, how would you know that this is the right answer? So in that discussion, the Gemara talks about Chachma Dav Minavi. So Romy, if I was giving a Rav Shefter Bechina, you would have gotten an A. Would have been like, why does Chacham Adav Minav, why does Divrei Neviyos come up in our Sigya?
Does that mean you were better to see the Musar?
What?
Does that mean that you were better to see the Musar?
I listened to it. I did.
What did you think about it?
Because Shai Gulman, who sits next to me, told me I have to listen to it. So I listened to it on my drive home on Sunday. I could talk about it. I have views about it. Talk about it now, or let's talk about it later. On the recording, you don't want me to talk it out. You want me to have a record reflect my response?
I do.
We could talk about it. Let's learn a little bit first, and then we could schmooze. So I just like this Ramban's very interesting, and the Gemara distinguishes between in that discussion that the Gemara says that nevuah achal pi shenitla min hanaviim min hachachamim lo nitla. If you guys saw that passage in the Gemara. Just a very great line here in the Ramban. He takes issue with other comments and he says, what this means is, achal pi shenatla nevuas hanaviim shehu amara v'hachazon. If you listen to Rabbi Feldman's Sichas Musar about Saras, anybody here? I got stuck in the base medrash for it. He said, you know, when your friend suggests a shidduch, someone suggests a shidduch to you, and you say, what do you think? And your friend says, I don't see it. Like, oh, that, I don't see that. I don't see that. So my friend was making fun of, like, how does your friend possibly know whether it's a good idea? He's like, your first question is, did he not see it b'mare, or did he not see it b'chazon? Like, what kind of nevuah did he not see it in? So here the Ramban alludes to those different types of nevuahs. He says, "Nevuas hachachamim shehi b'derech chachman lo nitla, ela yodim ha'emes beruach hakodesh shebekirbam." This is a very interesting more nevuchim epistemology of knowledge and prophecy question. I think what the Ramban here is saying that derech chachma is sometimes itself seen as a type of nevuah. Like, where does knowledge come from? And Rambam Mor Nebuchim, when he talks about this, it's pretty clear that he thinks there are just different levels of knowledge, and Nebuah is like a higher level of it. But it's not this distinct mode of knowing from general knowledge. You guys familiar? You know? Like, especially a lot of the standards that Rambam gives for how do you know someone's another. He says, oh, like, you know, they're very good at predicting things that actually happen. And so you get that in the Rambam. There's this idea of Yodim Ha'emes Beruach HaShikoyer Shebekirbam, and that type of nevuah is still around. And then the Rambam, you get this as all knowledge is like overflow from the Seichel HaPoel. Just nevuah, it's a greater type of overflow or things like that. Yeah, Ned?
Yeah, this isn't really like...
I'll say this, you know, there's also comments of the Ravid. The famous Ravid about, I think it's Hadasim Sheniktam Rosham. You know what I'm talking about? The Rambam has a psak, and the Ravid says, Kfar Hofia Ruach HaKodesh, the base Midrashenu, that this din is wrong. And it says, oh, is the Ravid saying that he had Nevuah? But, you know, presumably he means it in the sense of the Ramban, that, you know, like, we know this to be the case, though.
I don't know where we'll get that presumption from.
Say it again?
I don't know where we'll get that presumption from.
Which presumption?
I don't think there's enough information, given that likes to use turns of phrase fairly often.
Yeah.
I don't see how. I don't think there's enough there to read any sort of coherent message in it that we can only attribute to it.
I agree. Sounds like we're on the same page here, Ned.
Why do you respond like a Sodurea type thing?
Say it again.
It reminds me more like a Sodurea type thing. It's less of a rational mode of thought.
You think it's not a rational mode of thought? It's more what?
It's a private religion.
Beruach HaKodesh Shebekirbam, you think that's like an external type of knowledge? Why do you say that?
It's not just like the rational faculties. It's their subject to Beruach HaKodesh.
Ah, you think that's something external, or... You don't think Shebekirbam, literally. Alright. It's Ned's view. How do you know this, Ned? Say Sod Hashem Yireh. You know, I had this chavrusa. He'd always ask me, "Oh, how do you know that?" And I would say, "Oh, Sod Hashem Yireh." And he'd always say, "So how do you know?" as like always his response.
And he said, logical, clear mind.
Well?
And he said, logical, clear mind.
All right, so you guys are not as excited by this Ramban as I am, so we'll move on to Kovan Amidasto. Fair enough. We have, let's start with this Mishnah in Avos, just because it's a Mishnah, and then we'll get into our Sugya on Vavasa Yadbez. Some people, I guess the phrase Midastom, most people know it from this Mishnah in Avos. What do we have here in the Mishnah? Avos experts.
Zeb? Basically different ways of relating to property.
Yeah, different ways of thinking about property, what's mine, mine and thine, as they say. So what do you have in Mishnah Yud? Tell us about the Arba Midos Ba'adam.
Yeah, Arba Midos Ba'adam, Omer Shli Shali, Shalom, Zimunos Vedas, Yesha Omer and Zimunos. So, yeah, so if you say what's mine is mine and yours is yours, like basically property, you know, everyone has their own property, and that's sort of the normal half of people, or like sort of the average person. Some say this is Midos.
Right, so some people seem to say that mine is mine, yours is yours. That is, you know, like kosher, right? It's okay. Other people say it's midas tom. Why is it midas tom? So what is midas tom? So the bartender actually says that it in and of itself is not midas tom, but it's karov midas tom, or it's it facilitates, or it would lead somebody to midas tom behavior, right? Karva davar lovely to midas tom. Why? Take it away, Zav. Shemitoch.
Yeah,
Shemitoch.
Shemitoch, since you're, like, regular in this.
Yeah, used to it.
You're used to it. I feel the davar shefavero nena ruino faser lo yir tzilano zesavero. So even something that your friend is competitive from it, and you're not going to lose anything, so you're still not going to.
So in a word, what's the idea?
Basically, you're just gonna, you're not gonna help your friend, you know, you're just gonna kinda maintain property division.
Correct, meaning if you are obsessed with what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, that in itself is not a problem, but it's gonna lead you to behavior where you'll exclude others from what's yours, even when it's harmless to you. And that's midas tom. Correct? Why is it called midas tom? So the bartender helps us here. Why is Zuhais a midas tom? Haregel mi beneyam. What does that mean?
They basically intended to sort of, I guess, something like...
Keep out outsiders. Right, they wanted to keep people away from stone.
Yeah.
Even though...
Yeah, even though Ashai to hire some Thomas, you die from them, Beloya, that's sort of the meaning, even though the land was, you know, wide and they weren't going to lose it.
Yeah, there's like plenty of resources available for everyone, right? But they didn't want outsiders in, even though it would come at no cost to them. That's why it's considered Midas Tom. All right, everybody familiar with the concept of Midas Tom? We in agreement that seems like a bad thing? Yeah? So the question is, what is the badness of it? Like, wherein lies the badness of midas tom? So we're going to engage for a second in the type of a priori analysis that might have been condemned in a recent Sifas Moser. So what? Wherein lies the badness of midas tom? What would you say? Like, what's wrong with this perspective, right? After all, the Mishnah says, according to some views, Shali Shali and Shalcha Shalcha is Midas Beinonis, right? It's not Lefnei Mishur Sadin, but it's still a kosher. Zacharia?
I think Alusa is not being Lefnei Mishur Sadin is kosher. As in, I think it's saying, you're right, from a property perspective, from a din perspective, you're justified.
Oh, and we know from our Pshara discussion that Lo Nechar Va Yushalayim, El
Nitnei,
Shemita Dineim Al Din Torah.
You should want good to happen to other people. It's at literally no cost to you, and you still don't want to do it, just to, you know, assert your authority over your stuff. It's a clear problem.
So Zacharia says that Midas Stone is not so bad. That's your view, and you're right, I think, is look at the Mishnah and Avos. By the way, some say midas bananas, some say midas stom. Those two views are not so far apart. Midas stom itself would be a type of lefnim bishuras hadin behavior. Is that your point?
I mean, some of it wouldn't do tzedakah even if it was free. Like, that's not clearly a good person. Clearly not a good person.
Right. Not a chassid. Depends what you think about tzedakah. Tzedakah is a little tricky, right?
And someone who, under no circumstances, would want to do tzedakah.
Didn't we look at that Peter Singer quote here in class?
Yeah.
In Shir?
Yeah.
We did, right? He said that if you fail to give tzedakah, then you've done, like, bad.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess it depends what you think about that. Anybody sympathetic to Zahari's view? It's just a failure to do lefnim mishuras hadin?
I think you could connect to broader tzedakah problems, but, like, it's just an action.
Okay. This is Zacharia's suggestion. I like the evidence from the Mishnah in Avos. Oh, might support you, right? It's got the reflection of the attitude of Shildi, Shildi, and Shilcha, Shilcha. Okay. So, anybody have a problem with Zacharia's perspective? Daniel, you have a problem with it, or you think it's kosher? Well, right. In which case, the question of whether you're kofan on Midas Tom is just a question of whether you're kofan on the Fnimi Shura Sadin.
Or this particular kind of.
Yeah, because that's
no cost to the person doing it.
Right.
It's like you have the usher, like, oh, it's not so big for an usher to do it, and he's rich already.
Right.
So it's not so big deal for this guy to do it, because no cost to
him. Right. Great. Zav?
I'm just going to push back on that a little. Like, it does seem, at least from the Torah, that Sodom is pretty bad, and, like, they were destroyed because of their Eda. Like,
right.
It's not just a lack of.
Yeah, except that I think the way you could respond there is that there are other bad things going on in Sodom. Mm-hmm. And this was just one aspect of their badness.
Yerushalayim was destroyed because it didn't sell well.
Right. Right, so I agree. Like, Sodom is like a. You don't want to be lumped into that category, but you might say the Midas Sodom.
In this, it's just, it makes it sound like this is like the defining trait
of Sodom. I think so.
It's what it sounds. I mean, maybe,
it's stuff that went on, even what they did to, you know, the. You know, Lot's
right.
Visitors is much worse than just.
I mean, somehow that could be an expression of this.
Right. Meaning the not wanting the visitors in.
Yeah.
Ned, you have a thought on this?
The Ramban says that nothing was going on there.
Hey, what?
The Ramban says nothing was going on there.
Nothing was going on there.
Yeah.
Meaning what?
Because they wanted to get to know them.
They still did bad things,
yeah.
You know?
But those bad things were leads like hospitality and stuff. As opposed to.
I mean, it's all just this type of. Just like Shali Shali and Shacha Shacha. Yeah. That's the thought. That's your view. So you're saying that Zev. Midas Sodom itself is not so bad.
That's used in
the Shadow. Okay. Maybe. God, we have a defender of Midas Sodom in the room. Ned's our Stone Man. Now, let's move away from this question of how egregious is it, but what type of wrongdoing is it? Like, where what's wrong about it? Daniel?
Manny. It might just be an issue of, like, arrogance. Like, you're not really, like, as in, it's a kind of like a power move, in the sense that you think you control everything, and everyone's like, you will everything wrong to you. Like, it's kind of like going off of what Pryor saying, that, like, you don't lose anything from whatever happens. You just have, like, this power. You feel like you have this power to control what other people do. Anyway.
Okay, good.
Kind of, like, not realizing in a way, like, kind of arrogance, not realizing in a sense that, like, things really don't necessarily belong. Like, it's kind of what's happened with, like, the Torah. Maybe we won't be able to, but, like, nothing really belongs to you so much.
It's right.
Kind of, like, everything
that works nicely with the context of the Mishnah Navos also, right? If you say, Shali Shali and Shacha Shacha, that's like Midas Dom, because you have like this fetish for property rights or something, right? Over helping the other person or something like that, right?
That's like not acknowledging God's
sovereignty.
Yeah,
you know,
over things.
Right, like that great Torah's Chaim we saw, I think it was Torah's Chaim, about why you're Ovid, considered Ovid Avodah Zara if you don't give tzedakah, right? Because you're failing to acknowledge the sovereignty of Hashem over property. So one way of putting this is that I'm just going to use the word that it's like a moral shortfall. You could think of this in Daniel's way, that gets in terms of like you're just obsessed with owning what's yours, right? Not appreciating like where true Bibles comes from, like the perspective of the tour and stuff out of this off. Is everybody good? That's a possibility here? So it's there's some wrongdoing in insisting that this is yours to the exclusion of helping somebody else. How else might you think of this? The idea of meet us stone, Benji?
You say it's almost like a form of nezek, in that like the other person really should have the use rights to something that, you know, if it doesn't bother you, and you're preventing them from doing it.
Why should that person have the use rights if it doesn't bother you? That's what I want to ask.
Because that's like what anti-meet us stone is, that people have rights to, people like can do whatever they want as long as it doesn't conflict with the other people's stuff. And there's nothing inherently so great about having private property.
Sounds like you're endorsing the kinds of things that Lichtenstein said were anti-halachic in nature, in that rights discussion. I was like, John Stuart Mill's principle of liberty that, you know, you can do whatever you want so long as you're not harming somebody else.
Right, meaning not in like a morality sense, but in terms of like usage rights, you can use whatever you want. You have the rights to all goods as long as it's not infringing on someone else's.
Yeah. But why do you think that should be? Like what would make it the case that
it could be that it's like a utility thing. It's better for everyone.
Yeah.
That's the case.
I think that's right. Doesn't that sound eminently reasonable? Did anybody click on the link that I added?
Yeah, great.
On Pareto.
I throw to find equity.
Improvement.
That's the will to do harm to some particular groups of people. I thought it was pretty
wonderful. Let's see, where did I put that in here somewhere? Here. I like this little definition. So a Pareto improvement is a type of definition of efficiency. See here? A Pareto improvement occurs when a change in allocation harms no one and helps at least one person, given an initial allocation of goods for a set of persons. Does everybody see that? Now, a Pareto improvement is different from Pareto optimality. Pareto optimality means that there's no way of making a change to help someone without making somebody else worse off. Then you're in an optimal situation, right, where any reallocation is going to harm somebody. But let's go for the more modest thing. A Pareto improvement is that we can make some change in allocation which will make somebody better off without hurting somebody. Any historians of economics here? Kobe, that's good. Good to see you. Lucky you're in the room. Are you familiar with this, or?
Yes, I have. I've heard this concept many times. People yell
this. The Griff.
The Griff, yes. The Griff, unfortunately, right now has COVID.
So. I don't know. Poor guy. Right. So the idea of a Pareto improvement is a major principle of efficiency, right? Because you're getting more benefits for everybody when you change the resources to make somebody better off without making anybody else worse off, correct? What does that sound awfully similar to in Hebrew? Zanena vezelo chaser, maybe kofen al midas stom, right? Like, why not enforce that reallocation? Correct? Like, I have a house in the Poconos that no one's using. There's lots of people who could use that house. Government will get it cleaned and make any repairs, let's say. So it's Pareto efficient. You get these people home, it comes at no cost to me. Right? That's a Pareto efficient reallocation. Right? So I'm just going to use that it's a Pareto improvement to reflect the fact that maybe that's what underlies the Zenen of Azelo Chaser. Now, Benji, do you agree that this would be an economic or an efficiency-based interpretation of the din?
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, it's like we saw in the cases of Chalukas, that's why I have here... I had a few remember. see if I can find them. Here. Recall, for example, Rashi on Asis Lagashar Vatov in Bava Metzia Kuf Ches about Dina Devar Metzra. Why is it that we allow the Matzron to displace the buyer? Because it's a iata nechzar kolkach, right? The buyer doesn't lose all that much if he could find another property. And the matzron gains such that it's not a tircha for him, lios nechasav chalukin, right? He has contiguous plots of land, which is cheaper for him to plow, cheaper for him to guard, right? So there is a type of efficiency explanation for dina d'var metzra itself. I think we saw this earlier in the year, right? Similarly, see how good you guys, how good your memory is. Kobi,
yeah, so far that if you accept this question, you're already like accepting that maybe your efficiency argument is not so making you that dumb anymore. Like fundamental. Here you're talking about next up Okan.
Yeah.
Which is already like very different than the end of process.
Correct.
You might just be connected or something. I don't know if I'm necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. This is not even Midas Dom. This is a different type of principle. But I'm just giving some other examples where we've seen that some consideration of efficiency seems to be at work. Right? That there's a... You're right. Here, well, you could be Rashi saying, you know, the Nesek Lokaf, meaning it's like a minor inconvenience as opposed to like a bona fide, you know, loss, something like that. But I hear your point, right? Either way, all things considered, Rashi thinks it's more efficient to assign the property to the Masron than to the Kohen. Correct? In Hezek Re'iyah, we might have seen some type of efficiency argument also. Where do we see that?
Sorry. It's not like the Sagas Kful and the Tree Secrets?
Yeah. The Sma seem to think that one of the benefits of, or one of the reasons for Hezek Re'iyah is to give the owner of the karka greater usage of his karka, right? Like it improves the number of things he's able to do there. Right? Again, there is... Take Kobe's point, it's not stacked up against the other guy's not chaser so much. Maybe there's some chisar and have to chip in for a wall. But there seems to be some economic consideration of improving people's use of their land. And then similarly, in our discussion in the last year, the takanos, or the me'ikar adin remedies for dividing up a shutfus, right? How will allow the property to be divided, you know, might be driven, we saw in some formulations, by similar type of efficiency considerations, right? Especially in the Chazon Ish, that my use is encumbered by my partner's opposition to me, and that's just not an efficient division of resources. Ready with me? Okay. So I think it's quite possible that that's what underlies Kofin al Midas Stom. And so I want us to give thought, and when we, as we get into the sugya here, about whether it's better to think of Midas Stom and Zenen of Zelo Chaser as some type of moral failure, like Daniel was saying, to insist on your property rights to the exclusion of somebody else's usage when it comes at no cost to you is just wrongful, versus saying the halacha is going to enforce Kofin al Midas Stom so that we could just maximize the happiness across different members of society, right? It's more efficient to allow people to benefit from your resources if it comes at no cost to you. Not that there's anything morally wrong with not giving somebody use. Daniel?
Why can you claim the threat or movement that for your psyche, there is a cost?
Unless what's the cost?
You're just not that good a person. You like to have this person not benefiting from your project.
Well, then you have to see a psychologist.
Well, then right. I might come on to the issue of moral failure.
Yeah. But then you're saying the real wrong... Right.
Well, yeah, then you're just getting back to the...
Right, then you're really back at the moral failure then.
So really, it's so can you claim the credit of movement to a degree is branching off of this moral
No, I think the Pareto thing would say, the way I want to think about it is that there's no moral failing. It's totally okay for you to have a property fetish. Like, that's part of, like, the Torah's conception of property is that you could say it's mine and I'm not going to let other people hear, right? From that perspective. But, you know, we also want society to run efficiently, so we're not going to let you do that.
That does come at cost, though. There is a cost.
Well, let's assume there's no cost. Let's assume, because I think just by definition, well, let's assume that Midas Tome has no cost in it. Right? Once there is a cost, maybe it's not Midas Tome. Right? It's like there's a type of chisaron. Rami, you have a question?
Yeah, I was just curious why you didn't formulate the Pareto. Is the Pareto improvement thing the same as saying, like, that this is basically a question of what the ultimate aim of property is? So, like, Is property supposed to function as, like, whatever the owner decides, therefore you can do it, or is property about utility? So is that the same point?
You could phrase it that way. I just think you're getting very deep in, like, thinking about property itself, as opposed to just saying about what's the halachic interest here, right? Maybe the halacha has an interest in efficiency, regardless of what we think the underlying purpose of property is. I have no objection if you want to think about it as a property question, but I think we can just think of it in broader terms now. Right? Why are we kofin on Midas Tome? Is it because it's some moral failure, or is it because we just want to prove an efficient allocation of resources? Any questions on this, Ned? The green light to proceed from your perspective?
Green market, green light.
Okay. So let's look at both Basra Yud Beis and Beis. Volunteer to take us through case one and case two, or case one, two, and three. Net, I'm Rav Huna. You have to scream.
I'm Rav Huna, Rav Show. Pita, really question.
Yeah, we only achad metzra, I think. Right, on one. So what's the issue here? Tell us about the Bechor.
So Bechor gets two portions. The question is, do we give the Bechor two portions? If we have a whole pile of land, how do you distribute the portions? Should we give the Bechor two portions for its seafood? Or give him whatever two portions we feel like giving him?
Yeah. So let's say you have a parcel of land. Let's say you have, I don't know, a lot of brothers. And you're going to give up these different. You're going to be chulik it this way. I guess you have eight brothers and one bechor. So you're going to give the bechor the pays for pashut, the anam bechor. You're going to give him property like this. Or does he have some entitlements to get contiguous parcels of land, right? Such that wherever the bechor gets, he'll get two spots that are right next to each other. Everybody get that from the... Okay, so what's the din? He gets them
as one.
That's pashut, right? That's a pshita. Okay? Yeah, same for Yavam. What's the rule by Yavam? It's a little complicated, but normally... Yeah. Yavam not only inherits his own chelek, but he inherits the chelek of his deceased brother. Yakim al Shem Achiv Lenachala. Correct? So the question is, when he gets two chalakim, just take out before, and then Yavam, right, versus the other brothers, does he get two, or does he get split up properties? Is that clear to everybody? Yeah? Any questions on this? Okay, so you have machlokas Abaye and Rava. Abaye says that bechor karya rachmana. So the din of a bechor is the din of a yavam is the same as a bechor. Yes. Okay. Well, forget about Rava. We don't have to worry about Rava right now. So far, the Gemara has not said anything about kofen al midas stone. Correct. Pashtus the gzeras hakasev bechor karya rachmana, and you know whatever the limit is for bechor. Is what? What's the basis for the Bechor getting the same property? Well, a clear and logical mind, Cheetah. Well,
you're saying what's the reason for it?
Yeah.
Like it's more
what's the basis?
It's more useful to have two contiguous
spots. You think it's just also an efficiency type consideration? I thought the Rishonim were a little more explicit that it has to do with it being like one shame yoresh, if I'm not wrong. Did I make that up though? Maybe Tosos had a view like that. Maybe Tosos implies that. But the Gemara itself is not clear about what the basis for the Bechor getting them together, what that is. Look, conceptually, what might you say? Conceptually, you might just say that it's like one... A Bechor doesn't have two kochos in Yerusha, right? It's not that he's inheriting as a son and as a Bechor, and therefore gets two separate portions. He's entitled to a double portion. And that's... And so, of course, it's Pshita that he gets contiguous lots. Yes? Meaning he doesn't inherit as two distinct personalities. And then the Gemara is going on, and the Gemara is saying, well, in the Yavam, is the Yavam like Yarshining for himself and for his brother, or is he more like a Bechor, and he gets one double lot, and that's Machlokas Abayin Rabba. Yes? Everybody good with that? So I don't think you have to get into... efficiency type considerations here. And in fact, in the Gemara to Meduya, that we're not appealing to things like Kokan Amidah Stone at this stage. Okay, you agree? Okay. So Kokan Amidah Stone enters at the next stage. So, Ned. Yeah. So he bought a plot next to his parents, yeah. And now the father died, and they're dividing the land.
Okay. Give me my plot of land next to the
plot of land that I already own. Correct. So I want to yarshin my chelek in a plot that's contiguous to the thing I already have. Okay. And what does Rabba say?
So in that circumstance, appeal to this person. That's Kokan Amidah Stone.
Yeah, so Midah Stone in this context means that he's entitled to get that, and the brothers have to give him that contiguous spot. Okay?
Maybe. Could be that.
Well, we're Kofan Midastom. We don't know what that means yet, but at the bottom line, we're going to force the brothers to give it to him. Yes? Okay. So, why are we Kofan Midastom here? What's the underlying principle? So, Rashi tells us. Yeah. Zene nevezel lo chaser, meaning. What's the thought that?
They're not losing anything by giving them the spot of land. So they should.
Yeah, so I just want to note that Rashi himself in our Sugya equates Midas Stone with Zen and Zel Lochas there. Which I think is somewhat intuitive, right? If you guys associate these things together, right? It's Midas Stone precisely because they could gain and you're not losing.
And is the benefit, what's the benefit of it? Is that an efficiency or is that some other? Because that doesn't sound like an essential thing. It's like, I don't know.
Well, Rashi's assuming that there is a Hanah. What's the Hanah? I'm assuming the Hanah is like, you know, Rashi in Dinah Bar Mitzvah. It's cheaper to have two fields that are together. You know, you could plow them in one shot. You don't have to pick the tractor up to somewhere else. You could have one guy watching the whole thing. You don't have to have two separate watchmen. Those types of things, right? I think economists are good, like it's an economies of scale type thing, right? Something like that. All right. Rav Yosef disagrees. There's a lot packed into their objection here. Just how does the Gemara present it?
Yosef says that the brothers can tell him no. We think it's worth more. That portion of land is worth more, like just like the custom of barbarian, which is not people from barbarian.
It's not people from barbarian, right?
How do you know?
The sons of Mary.
This is the. Why do you think it can't be? Think it can't be Marian? No. Fochba, even though this is before America was discovered, you can see a remez here and here.
This raises a very what type of argument is this that the brothers have?
There's some sort of relativistic value that we'll take into consideration.
Yeah, relativistic? I'm just gonna use a more contemporary term. There's a subjective valuation. Deep question, right? How do you evaluate these lots? Do you look to some objective metric and say this is their fair market value? Or can the Yorshim say, like, oh, this has such subjective value to me that it's worth more? Okay? So this is a major issue.
I think in classic economics, of course, valuations are always going to be subjective, right? Because it's your private preference ranking of what you rank as worth more than something else. So here, depending on what the Gemara means, it might be that the Gemara is acknowledging that there's going to be subjective features that will determine how we evaluate the not just the land, but whether or not it's Zen and Abizachasar. Why? Because objectively speaking, you might say the lands are on the market, they would get the same value, right? But one of the brothers says, no, this one's worth more to me. So does that mean that he's Chaser in virtue of his subjective ranking of the karka? What do you think? Rafi?
Like all of the brothers were saying that you can't do the sodom, maybe it's like something with them all agreeing that it's more valuable and not necessarily.
Just one guy?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. For some Rishonim, this is just a tactic. Did you guys catch that in some Rishonim? This is like a tactic literally used just to squeeze the brother. Anybody catch that? Yes or no? What? No? Okay, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Rafi, you're right. It does sound like it's all the brothers here. But look at Rashi. Rashi says, Amru ache ma'alinan le ilavai, or ilue, lanu hi mishubechas ke karkaosav shel barmerion shahayim ula. So lanu, right? There's this subjective special ranking of this. And then he says, "Mistavra Hadrav Yosef b'sade Baal, she yecholin lomar pa'amim shezu misbareches mishar hasados." So Rashi says, this has got to be talking about a stebal. Do you know what a stebal is? Stebal is one that doesn't need to be watered. What?
With fields, with trees.
It doesn't need irrigation. I mean, the rain is enough to sustain it. And the thought is, or that it is natural, like the land is naturally moist enough to keep the produce growing. So the brothers have a legitimate argument where they could say, oh, maybe this field, you know, it's possible that it gets watered better than the other field, so that's why we prefer this one. But there's some reasonable basis for their assertion. If you look at Tosos here says, this is on page 23 of the source sheet. How does Tosis understand this?
Tosis
Toslani Bayes and Bayes. Mr. Rashi's argument is that they're pointing to some feature of the field that is more valuable to them. Or they're like saying, we are speculating that this field gets watered better than the other fields. What's Tosis's? Rami,
I feel like you could have just done more profit from it. We could have, like, I'm going to have a higher spend and sell it through a higher rate that exists on the market.
Basically. A lot, no. What are the B'nai Bar Marion?
Well, I guess they're rich.
Yeah, they're rich. And because they're rich, they just hold on to their sadas for no reason, even at a loss. Right? Meaning, they don't feel compelled ever to, they're not pointing to any feature of the field that's a reason for them to want it. They're just saying that, like, hey, we're not interested in selling or giving it away. We want to hold on to it. Meaning there's no feature of the field that they're pointing to in virtue of which they're raising the price. They're just saying we're rich and we could afford to not sell. So we're going to jack up the price against you. We'll come back to this in a minute. It's a very important machlokas to flag. Okay? Different methods of... Meaning, on Tosvos, it's a very strong subjective valuation. I don't want to sell. And I'm not going to let you have it unless you give me a lot of money. Rashi points us slightly more in the direction of objective features. Of the karka for Rashi, right? It's a speculation about whether the field will be well watered and irrigated. Whereas for Tosos, it's about the subjective bank accounts of the seller, where they're just not forced into selling, so they're willing to hold out for a better price. Everybody see that difference? Okay. That's going to be important in a moment. But in the interim, let's go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara has another case. Now take us to the next case. Let's say you have two lands. So each land has its own source of water, its own spring, right?
Under Rava, he knows that go from that stone. In that situation, you go from that stone because presumably they are equal in value.
Okay. Or Yosef disagrees.
Yosef, presumably the high end, the delta of the high end, the delta. There's times when one source of water will dry out, the other one will dry out.
Yeah. Now, when you read Rav Yosef, do you get the sense that he's disagreeing with the principle of Kovan al Midas Stone?
That's the technicality.
Yeah, I agree. The sense that I get is that in each case, Rav Yosef simply has a reason to think that it's not Midas Stone here. Right? Rashi's explicit about this. High Midvil, high low Midvil. Maybe one of these irrigation sources of water will dry out and the other one won't. The brothers could say that they want a piece of each field to diversify their risk, right? Dilav midas stom hi. It's not midas stom, given that there's a rational reason for them wanting to split it in the way they want to, as opposed to giving him the karka on his side. Romy, you have a comment on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the more condition stom zeh, midas stom is there.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds like the principle of kovan midas stom is not disputed, but like maybe exactly what types of claims make it no longer midas stom. Right, that's what's being disagreed about. Okay. And so Romy says that's the diak of Tarti Achad Nagra. If they're both being watered by the same water system, then there's no reason for them to insist. So Kigonze, Kofan Amida Stom, here everybody agrees, and we are Kofa. Yeah? Okay. That's the important background in the Gemara. Now, as Rashi points out, we're kofan midas stom, when in fact we could all agree that the karkos are shabbat. Now, I want us to think deeply about the nature of midas stom. Before we can do that, we have to look at Tosfos here on Yud Beis and Yud Beis, because that sets up the analysis for the Achronim, who weigh in on the nature of the kviya. So Tosfos on Yud Beis and Yud Beis is bothered by What issue? What? So say a little more. Yeah, once you have Kofin al Midas Tom, why isn't the Bechor issue answered by Kofin al Midas Tom rather than by, you know, or the Yavam case? Well, Ritos, Temelari. I just want to point out, it's not obvious. The Gemara didn't appeal to a Pasuk for Bechor. But the Gemara said that Bechor is Pasha. Yavam it learned out from Bechor, but it's not clear that Makar for Bechor, meaning maybe the answer for Bechor is that it is a type of Midas Tom. No? What? Which Pasuk? As I'm saying, there is no Pasuk in the Gemara that learns out that the Bechor gets them together.
Why?
So Ned's suggesting maybe he's really referring to the Yavam case? Right, the Gemara says that the Yavam gets them together because Yavam is called a Bechor. Right? So maybe Joseph is asking, why do you need a pasuk for the Yavam case? Why not just argue directly from the logic of Kofin al Midas Tom? Think that's what he's saying? Maybe. Okay.
This only applies to disputes that occur between two brothers, but if it's two against one, we're not going to allow the two to force the one to give them their portion that they want to have.
So everybody see that answer, Tosos?
I just think there's more information that we would not have known.
Well,
there's more information that we would not have known that we need a custom for.
Well, let's think about this example for a second. What's Tosos saying here? Tosos is saying, suppose Zachariah, me, and Daniel are all brothers, and we jointly get this inheritance. Zachariah and I want to go into a partnership. So we say, Daniel, I want Zachariah and my properties to be contiguous so that we could have this joint enterprise together. Could we say Kofin al Midas Tom against Daniel that Zachariah and I get our properties together? Can we? No, Kobe? How do you know not?
How do you know yes?
Well, you could say Kofin al Midas Tom. Tosus assumes not. Tosus just says that you can't do that. See, other Rishonim are not so sure about that. Tosus assumes you can because, for whatever reason, and I think this is problematic, the right to assume, the right to get contiguous properties is only if those properties are owned by a single person. You can't have two people banding together. Why that's the case is a little mysterious, right? Why can't you have efficiency considerations in a shutfus? Okay? We'll come back to that, Hara. But Tosos thinks, as Ned said, that if a Yavam or a Bechor was like wearing two separate hats, one as a regular child and one as the Bechor slash Yavam, then you'd be no better off than two shutfin who want to join their powers, their two brothers who want to combine, and they can't force the third brother to give them contiguous lots. Correct, Nick? So that's why Midas Tom would not be sufficient. You need something more fundamental to say that a Yavam, a Bechor, are not wearing two hats. They have a single hat that entitles them to a double portion. Fine. That's answer number one. Answer number two. So very difficult. This cuts the exact opposite way and says, actually, maybe on the pure principles of Midas Tom, the Bechor should have been entitled to force the brothers to give him both. But actually, a Bechor is worse off as a Yoresh with regard to his second Chilek because it's just a Matana. And maybe since it's considered a gratuitous gift, that's not a strong enough of an entitlement to force the brothers to give him contiguous properties. Everybody see that?
This is still the end. This is one against two, so.
What?
This is still one against two.
No. This is a Bechor. He's saying maybe the way I understand this is that a Bechor, under the Dinei Yerushas Bechor, since it's a Matana, does anybody know that? Does anybody here know what Tosus is referring to? What? What does he mean when he says Matana Kaya Rahmana?
Well,
Yeah, the Bechor portion is considered a gift, not a right. I'll just say. So the thought is that since it's a mere gift, it's not a strong enough of an entitlement to force the brothers into giving it to him contiguous with his Yerusha entitlement law. Everybody see that? So that's why you need a special din for Bechor or Yavam. It's not enough to rely on Kovan Amidas Stel. Okay? Daniel?
Why does it need to have a special status for Kovan Amidas Stel?
Good question. Daniel's saying, you know, just because it's a Matana, why does that preclude it from Kovan Amidas Stel, right? I agree with you. It's good. Tosis is 0-2 so far, right? First, he has this strange assumption about the brothers of Shutfin not being able to enforce the third. And then furthermore, Tosis has this assumption that if it's just a mere matana, that would block a claim of Kofan Amidah Stone. Yes? Good. I'm with Daniel on both of those points. Tosis has a third answer. Maybe he could do better here. So what does the Ritzvah say to answer this question? What's his point?
So, the right, he has no right to take a portion of the land. In Rabbanan, he does.
Yeah. Maybe Kofen Amidas Stom is only a Din Rabbanan. Did anybody see that? So this is very interesting. So we want to know, in terms of the nature of the Din, or what type of Din it is, Tosos in one answer wants to say Kovan al Midas Tom is a Din Drabanan, and the case of Yavin and Bechor might be a Din Daraisa. Okay? Are we okay with that? That would suggest that Kovan al Midas Tom doesn't have Daraisa approval, doesn't have Daraisa force. This is some sort of Takanas Chazal. I'm just curious if in your minds you think that leads more towards economic interpretation or a moral failure interpretation. Just thinking about it. Al regalachas. This move to saying it's drabanan. For me?
It's more like a be economic.
Yeah. I agree. I think so. I think the idea is that you know, if the moral failure was like really was truly egregious, you would think it would be a Din D'Oraisa, right? The strange thing for Chazal to impose. But if you think it's about an economic thing, we see this all the time, right? You have a Midoraisa, there's no way to break up a Shutfas. A Midrabanan, it's inefficient to be stuck with somebody else as your co-owner. So Midrabanan, we make a Takana to split it up. But I think it's very much in line with other types of takanas drabanan that we've seen, even though our metzor maybe being another example, on the assumption it's a drabanan. That midrabanan, they're trying to make the economic stuff more efficient, sisa yashavatov type considerations, tikkun medina, etc. So I agree with Romy's analysis on that. Ned?
Why does this only apply to before?
What?
Why does this answer the question?
Because Tosus is just trying to say why doesn't the Gemara give Kofan Amidas Stom to explain the Yava and the Bechor case.
But why do you, so meaning the assumption is you would need a Daraisa to override?
I think you would need a Daraisa. Tosus is just saying they're different in that the Gemara gives a more fundamental answer for the Bechor and Yavam case. It gives a Daraisa claim to get them together, to get the two properties together. Whereas in the non-Yavam, non-Bechor case of Kofan Amidas Stom, it's just a Drabanan claim. No. It just so happens to be that a Bechor has a primal Doraisa right to contiguous properties. Let's just say, because the way the Torah sets up his dual chelek is that it's a single chelek of a double portion. See what I'm saying?
Just
descriptive, correct. Not that the Bechor needs a Doraisa claim. Yeah. Okay. Let me get the last answer of Tosfos.
The Ode, not the Kofan, yes, the Ode, the Zenan is a Chaser. I knew she could fire her if I was clear. She knew my that was not.
So this is a huge chiddush. Tosos says it's the Baba Kama also, as you can see at the bottom of the page. What's Tosos' point here? That Kufan al-Midah Stom only works preemptively. Ex post.
Yes.
Meaning, what does he have in mind?
Person in
yeah. Usually, kofen al midas tom is only, Tosfos wants to say, bidyeved, right? Meaning the guy already lived in your land, you didn't lose. So now we're going to force you to not demand compensation from him. But you have a right to say, l'chatchila, I don't want him to live in my land, even though I'm not losing anything. At the daraisa level. But in this type of case, Ela mitakanas chacham kamar hacha de kofen.
What's this little example he brings?
The chatzet lo kaim la agra?
Yeah, and he lo gagam lo mega. It kind of runs counter to. Why is he bringing that as a. Why is it a filo?
Well, he's just saying in a zen ana bezel lo chaser case, you have a right to still not let somebody into your property. You're not obligated to house somebody. Even in a case of Zen and Abzal Chaser, it's only talking about a case where the guy already lived there, unbeknownst to you, whatever, and then after the fact, you're not allowed to charge him compensation.
So it's just not an example. The detail of the case aren't so far.
Correct. Yeah, that's just an example from the Mar Baba Kama of Zen and Abzal Chaser.
Maybe I was thinking maybe you could say, maybe he's not really Nana, but he says.
No, that's the case in the Gemara, right. Yeah. Okay. Everybody with me? So this answer of Tosos is just to say that Maker Adin, normally at a Daraisa level, we wouldn't be Kofan Midas Tom. Because you could only be Kofan Midas Tom. Sorry, normally Zen and Abzal Chaser doesn't apply with Hatchila. Can't be forced to house somebody at no cost to you. But here, even though it's a case of Hatchila, Midrabanan, we're going to enforce Midas Tom. Okay? So that's another variation of this idea that Midas Tom is only Din Drabanan, not a Din Daraisa. Okay? All right. That's the background. Now, when you get into the Achronim, starting here on page 21, we get into interesting conceptual territory about the nature of this Din. So we have Reb Shmuel Rozovsky here, in Baba Basra Yud Beis Mabez. And he opens up with a chakira. What's his chakira? Who prepared the Reb Shmuel? Raise your hand if you prepared the Reb Shmuel. It's hard. Go for it. Everyone's behind on the, everyone's in finals. Everyone's burnt out. Well, doing Chazara. It's okay, no judging. What?
That's what the Bechina is for.
Even on the Bechina, I don't judge. I just assign grades. Go ahead, Sparga.
On side suggests maybe Kofin is more just the power of based in, so you Kofan sharing more roots on you, doesn't change any of the monetary rights, you just hope he relents.
Yeah. Kofen al-Midat Stom is a principle of Kfiyah B'Gavra. I literally twist your arm until you consent to do it on your own. Right? We impose pressure. So it's a Kfiyah B'Gavra. So what type of din is it? How do you characterize this idea of Kfiyah B'Gavra?
Based in ordering society,
want
people to be acting
from
windows.
Yeah. It sounds almost, I would say, like a type of lefnim mishuras adin type of kfiya. Almost. Or take another example of almost makin v'onshin shalom min adin, in that it's not that the halachic facts are actually that this belongs to the other party. We're not changing anything fundamental based off midas tom. We're just saying the proper conduct is for you to do this. So we're now going to force you to engage in this like supererogatory or beyond din conduct. Do we agree on that, Zacharia?
Yeah.
But you can't do it until you get the guy to consent, almost, right? You need him to say rotsani for it to be valid. Right? Ima kavana rak de kofanos vachiyome rotsani. But it's his consent that makes it valid in the end of the day. And we're just trying to push him to agree to engage in this ideal type of conduct. All right? Aval, go ahead. Laredes.
You can't, basically just can't go take it by force against his will, because the guy has a real monetary claim to do it through a vote of
the Torah. Oh. The rest of the brothers have a legal right to get this karka through a goral. You guys understand how the goral works, right? You have all these different lots. You have A, B, C, D, whatever. You number all the lots. And you just do a goral that assigns it to the brothers. It's considered a fair way of dividing. We'll talk about that also. Why is a goral considered a fair way of dividing the state? But may Ikar Adin, any of the brothers, have a right to any of the lots through a goral. Now we have some extra legal consideration of kofen on midas tom. The only way to impose it on the brothers is to coerce them into consenting. So I think it's like a best characterized, close to what Zacharia said at the beginning. It's almost a lefnim mishuras adin type of principle. Okay. Hare yesh lo zchus lasos chaluka regila. The brothers are entitled to this regila. Notice again, he has this chus language, like a halachic entitlement or a halachic right. Avirakduhu midas tom, v'alkein kofenoso ad sheyaskim, blah, blah, blah. That's one side of the chakira. What's the other side of the chakira, Zacharia?
The other side is that it's kind of changed the dine mamon and the studios, and therefore it's kind of already, like, from the first instance, allocated the Mitzvah
land
to the guy who should get it.
Excellent. Meaning, the fact that it's Midas Tom alters the Din Torah assignment of rights to the brothers. Right? Meaning, what normally would be the case that the brothers have a Din Torah claim to any of these lots now gets redefined by Kofen on Midas Tom. Yes? So the Midas Tom now tinkers with the core Dine Mamon assignments. To what can this be compared? Remember when we studied Tzedakah? You know, we saw views that maybe there's only Kfiya Begavra. Tzedakah by definition is something that you give B'nediva Salev. Maybe you could have Kfiya Bedvarim, or you could have Kfiya Beshutim to convince somebody to want to give. But Tzedakah has to be a voluntary gift. That was one view of the Rishonim. Or you have this other view that, no, tzedakah becomes mamon aniyim. The halacha itself reassigns the property right to the ani. Right? That's effectively the 2 days here in Rav Shmuel about how kofen al midas tom affects the dinei nachala. One says it's an external moral principle or an external principle that gives the Bezdin a reason to want to coerce the parties to act in a certain way. The other says, no, Kofen al Midas Tom reallocates the core halachic rights. Questions on this? Now, how do you think that question relates to... So, let me say this. One option is that it's Kfiya Begavra. What's the other one? We'll call it that it's Mishtana Dine Mamon. Mishtana Dine Mamon. How do you think that question relates to this question about whether it's just an economic thing versus a moral thing? My question might be a trick question. Benji?
I want to say that if you think that it's Bashan, then it has to be just to kind of improvement. That has to come into Kippah.
Yeah, you want to say that?
I do, but it's, I don't want to call it too trick.
Right. It's fine if you want to say that. I think what I want to say is that the questions are independent of each other. I think that's the best analogy. Meaning, I think that either of these, the Kfi B'Gavra or the Mishana Dine Mamon, could work with... let me say this. Yes, I think either of these could fit with either of these. Right, so you could have a view that it's a moral failure along the lines that Daniel was suggesting. But that moral failure could be Mishana Dine Mamon. And the halacha views that is so egregious that it's going to reassign the property rights. Or that it's a moral failure that only gives the bezdin reason to be co-payer. Similarly for the economic consideration. It's an open question whether considerations of efficiency could override the din Torah, what would otherwise be the din Torah allocation, or simply give the bezdin a power to be co-payer. See that? Another way of thinking about this hakira over here, about the Kfi Gavra versus the Mishana Dine Mamon, is you could think, this is something we saw earlier in the year also, you could think of certain powers as being held by Beis Din to make takanos, to enforce certain things, and then you could think of certain rules as changing the assignment of rights objectively out there, independent of Beis Din managing it. The Mishana Dine Mamon view is saying that it gets changed in the substantive law. The Kfi B'Gavra view is saying that it gets changed at the procedural level at Beis Din's administration of it. Okay? But Benji, do you agree with me that either of those, like these questions are independent of each other more or less? Yeah? Anybody else have a view on that? Kobe, view on that? What?
I agree with Benji.
You agree with Benji? Zev?
It does seem odd, sort of, to force because of a moral failure. Like, you're not necessarily fixing the moral problem as you're just kind of... Like, if the only thing bad is an internal problem, then you're forced to do it. It's like, that's about the problem.
You don't like forcing on Staka?
No, if you say that the whole reason to forgive Staka is because of virtue and ethics, then it would be strange to force
somebody. Yeah, first time you force somebody to do it, the next time they'll do it voluntarily, right. And something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Like that would be the idea, right? It's like the first time REITs forces you to fundraise for them. And then, you know, by the third and fourth time, you're already doing it voluntarily.
Right, so why are those, like, Rishonim have such a hard time with
that? Why does what?
Why do the Rishonim have a hard time with that? Why comes to Tzedakah? Like, they could just very easily get that.
You know, I think there's just a deep intuition that Tzedakah is going to Diva Saliv, maybe? I think that's just, people think Tzedakah sounds like it's voluntary and...
I guess you wouldn't be. Right, even though it'll need...
That's special to Tzedakah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? Now, Rav Shmuel goes on in his analysis, and in this paragraph, Ned, were you reading it for us? Sahar, you're reading it for us.
Yeah.
So we have this open chakira, right? Which side do you think is correct? I ask you guys, just staring at the Gemara.
Seems more...
I think it's a reassignment.
Less than Kadash approaches to give a dollar.
Why do you think that's less than Kadash?
It's basically all sorts of things.
Yeah, but we know Bezdin's Makadvot, Shlomo, and Adin.
Yeah.
Right? So you're saying the idea of Kofanam Milastom sounds a little suspicious. So if it's going to happen, if the Gemara endorses it, it sounds like it's an extra legal type of Bezdin power. Just like Pshara. They could do Pshara, they could be Koval Milastom. Something like that?
Yeah.
Do you guys agree with Zecharia offhand? So Shmuel agrees with Zecharia. And he says this, Ibra.
So Ibra Nisfar near Yoser, after Kofan on Yisrael, we come up along Pakas Kusum in Harkaso, Barak Kukta Hudin, Kofan Oso Ashu Morosani. Right. So he doesn't lose Kus, it's just a Kyoka.
Why does he say that Misvara, that view, is near a Yoser? I guess for reasons like you're saying?
Or assumes this Kus is really strong, and if we're messing with Yimmy Nachlo, so far as like a strong.
It's not obvious, though. I mean, to me, it seems like an open question whether Kofan Amidas Stom is internal to Dinei Nachlos or external to it. Right? You might say the Torah gives you this gives the Achim these rights, unless it's a Midas Stom. No? You guys agree with me, or...?
It seems like if the whole Yisrael is like shalom, like I'm not giving up of my stuff even if it's gonna help you and not hurt me, like it seems like stuff and not changing, like that principle isn't gonna change the nature of Nachlos. It's just, you know, it is yours and still we're gonna give you
yours.
That's what it sounds like.
You see, what you're saying is very similar to what people were saying in the Stucca discussion about, I think Kobe, is this your concern? That if Stucca is a reassignment of the property rights to the Aniyim, then what's the Chi of Nesina about?
Just like it.
Fine if it was just your concerns to blame it on others. You're saying something similar. You're saying, well, how can it be Midastom if it's already theirs?
Yeah.
Like, if the Midastom, by definition, is that it's mine, but I'm forced to relinquish it. So you like this two-stage thing. I like, stage one, it's yours, but then Kovin Midastom requires the relinquishing, whereas if everything's at stage one, like the Torah itself reassigned the property right, it's hard to see why it's Midas Stom. Right? Does everybody see Zeb's concern? It's an interesting view, except I would say that it could be counterfactual. Like, this would have been yours if not for the Midas Stom consideration.
But isn't the Midas Stom about me?
Right, so if there was no Midas Stom type consideration, then yeah, you could have had any share of the chalukah. But because there's Midas Stom, we're not going to give you any share. Right? Okay, so let's look at Rav Shmuel. What does he say? And notice, Zecharia, he even goes further and says, by the way, if there is afkas aschus, if there is a reassignment of the dinei mamon, what would it be at best? Drabanan, right? Because mechatesi, that midaraisa, we could reassign rights based off Midas Stom. So I don't know where all these pre-theoretic intuitions of Shmuel come from here. But I'm sympathetic to what Zecharia is saying. Then he proves from Tosos in a very nice way that what? He proves first from the Mordechai that this is actually a reassignment of property rights. Not just a Kfiya Begavra. How does he prove that? He cites the Rashi and Tosvos about Ma'alina and Le'nichsi K'nichsi Debe Bar Marion. And basically, because it's Machlokas Rashi and Tosvos, the Mordechai says that what?
Kol
Dalingvar. That because we're not sure how to pafkin in this case about Rashi and Tosvos, we'll talk about what the Machlokas is, but how to define Ma'alina and K'nichsi Debe Bar Marion. The din is called Kolalimbar. Whoever beats up the other, whoever forces the karka, you guys all familiar with Kolalimbar? Whoever seizes the karka gets to keep it. Wait a second. Does Koldam Gar require Kofen Oso Achigam Arotsani? Usually not, right? It's not like Kofen Oso Achigam Arotsani and then Koldam Gar. No, Koldam Gar just means that the halachic rule is whoever beats the other one to it, whoever seizes control gets to hold on to it. So by definition, if it's Kol Delin Gvar, it doesn't require Kfiya Ayidei Bezdin. Correct? So Mavur Midvara from that Mordechai, go ahead, Zachariah. Da'adim Kofen. Da'adim
Kofen
on
his own mogul, she'in sarev hafilu as daito vas hamaso. Al korfa v'efshar lito lachila asamofumitza.
Meaning that Kofen Amid Hastom is a reassignment to the property rights maker Adin. Yes? Pakaz Chusa Meosa Sada. The other brothers lose their Schus because of Kofen Amid Hastom. It's not a Kfiya Begavra. Then he goes further even and wants to argue based off his reading of Tosvos that not only is it a reassignment to property rights, but it's a reassignment Midoraisa, not just based off of that kind of Drabanon. How does he prove that from Tosvos? Very beautiful proof. Tosvos was worried about what question?
And you walked us through the question. What was Tosvos' worry? Why appeals to the pasuk?
Why do we need a pasuk for Yavam? Why not just say? Well, we're not sure if there's a pasuk for Bechor, so. Why do we need a pasuk for Yavam? Why not just say Kofen Amid Hastom? Correct. Now, if Amid Hastom were just a din drabanan, then what? I'm sorry. That's true. Look. If Amid Hastom required Bezdin intervention of Kfiya Begavra, then what? You have a very easy nafkamina between the Bechor and Yavam case and the Kofen Amid Hastom case. The Kofen Amid Hastom case requires Kfiya Begavra. Yes? No?
Whereas those are property.
Yeah, whereas for sure, if the Xeris HaKosev of Bechor and Yavam, he wants to say, would be a reassignment to the property, right? So Zachariah, take us through this with Tzarchian. Why didn't Tosa just answer?
Alright, the name of the Nachmina, the Ashra the Rest of the Possible Law Samas Hapashat. Believe him or five matchfat.
Yeah, Tosa could have given a very easy Nachmina that based off Kofen Amid Hastom you require
Rotsani.
Whereas based off the Xeris HaKosev, you don't require Rotsani, it's a reassignment.
Yeah. So
he says what do we see from here? Yeah, that Kofen Amid Hastom gives you direct access to the property rights. Now, then he goes further. How do we know it's still Raisa?
That's what we learned from the Hasa, that there is this deraisa. If we learn from Pasuk that there's this reallocation.
Well, no. Now that we learn from the Pasuk, what's he saying in that line?
Oh, well, what would the Pasuk add?
Right, meaning?
Meaning he assumes that we would have it on the same level, same quality, you have a deraisa, you would have a Pasuk.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. Shmuel is assuming that Tosis's question assumes that not only are they both reassignments of property rights, but they're both reassignments of property rights midoraisa. Anybody see that? So you actually get a very fundamental, this is probably the most fundamental interpretation of Amid Hastom that we'll see, that not only is it deoraisa, but that principle, whatever it is, makes it the case that the Achim are no longer entitled to this lot. Okay? Now let's just think about that for 1 second, and then we'll end. We have two main theories here about what Amid Hastom is about. Let's say we go with the Pareto improvement economic theory. What does that mean according to Shmuel?
nothing so deep. But it means that there's some del Risa value to the Pareto improvement such that it prevails to redefine the del Risa dinamma haluka. Correct? If you go with the moral failure point, you get a similar conclusion about a del Risa value not allowing people to be so insistent on their shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalcha. I can take off that it's going to reassign the haluka rights. Okay? Which one of those is more intuitive?
Can you
hear me? What?
That the moral thing.
Yeah, you think that's more intuitive? Yeah, that would be a reason to reassign the rights of the archer?
From the Del Risa level?
Yeah. So, maybe. I think you'd have to ask a further question, and that is whether when Daniel told us about this moral failure thing, so is this to punish the person who's saying shali shali v'shalcha shalcha? Or to not allow him to act in this way? Or is it a remedy that's primarily there to benefit the person who would otherwise be mad at, right? Notice that on Daniel's view, the locus of the din is primarily aimed at who? Yeah, right? So the guy who doesn't want to share, right? The wrongdoer. If you think of it in terms of the Pareto improvement, then the din is primarily for the recipient. Yeah, for the benefit. Those are pretty different. Right? Now you might think, what would explain the halacha reassigning its dine chalukah? The pure dine chalukah of the Goral say every yorish is entitled to a fair shot at every lot. Right? If you go with a moral failure thing, then you're saying, well, like our interest in punishing the wrongdoer or something like that is a reason to tinker dina. Now that's fine. That's not. It's a little strange. It does sound a little strange, right? Whereas if you say, "Well, to achieve this really good result of the benefit to the guy," that would explain tinkering with the rules, right? Great. So let's stop here. I want to pick up next year with this Reb Nachum. Very related to what we just discussed. So we're a little bit in Litvish Achronim land for the end of today and next year. But it's very nice of Nachum also. And then I want us to think about this Malin and Knechtei de Beibar Merion debate. This is very fascinating. So what I alluded to earlier about whether you could have, what types of arguments can the other brothers make about jacking up the price of the adjacent lot. And it's related to our pshara discussion, if you get into this. And part of it's about the cost-benefit analysis. Is that the right word? When you say how much are you willing to pay for something? What's the term? No. But when you have a chaluka, do any of the yarshim have the right to say, well, I'm willing to pay more for it, to override a chaluka begora? So that's looming in the background here. Okay, let's stop here. Sorry for going a little over.
Are we planning on having